$4. See club for details.
In sports, good offense starts with good defense. The professionals at Lakeside Roofing believe in this same motto for your roof. Our full-time service department provides the defense to ensure you get the most out of your roof system. A regular scheduled roof assessment and maintenance is the defensive strategy to extend the life of your roof. Call the winning team at Lakeside Roofing today at 618-344-2800 or 314-241-5253 or visit us on the web at lakesideroofing.com. Choose experience. Choose Lakeside.
Looking for extra cash? Jewels on Hampton in St. Louis Hills pays some of the highest prices for diamonds, gold, silver, semi-precious stones, coins, flatware, and currency. Located at 4506 Hampton Avenue, just 3 blocks south of Chippewa. Learn more at jewelsonhampton.com or call 314-752-5000. That's 314-752-5000. Jewels on Hampton, paying some of the highest prices.
Every great success story starts with one brave decision. And if you're one of the millions of Americans with college credit but no degree, one brave decision is all that stands between you and the future you want. At Maryville University, we know returning to college takes courage, but your decision isn't really about going back to school. It's about moving forward. And we'll be with you every step of the way. Let's be brave together. Learn more now at online.maryville.edu.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby
and
to
get ourselves a treat. A treat, yeah. A treat. Remember, if you go to the movie theater years ago, and they had a little animated thing, and the hot dog jumped into the bun. Anybody yep. remember that? That was kind of dirty, actually.
They have that. They still have that if you go to the Skyview.
See, I knew you'd give them another
treat. No, they play that at the... In between.
The theater in Wentzville has something, and I just went to the theater in Chesterfield to see yesterday on Sunday, and it's a nice theater. And very nice theater. They got great stadium seating and everything.
Yeah.
But that's the theater in Wentzville that they just built. This it's like walking into a nightclub. I mean, they have a full-fledged half-circle bar that probably could seat 30 people at the bar. They've got a full kitchen there with entrees and dinner options and stuff like that. And it's the same people that are serving you the Quaker State popcorn with the $4 bottle of water and the $9 sodas. You know, I mean, it's the same people.
Quaker State.
I know a lot of people go, well, it's a movie theater. You're supposed to just go to a movie. I kind of like all that other stuff. You know, I like the ones where they have the, in fact, I think the Chesterfield and the Valley have a big arcade. You know, my grandson goes in there. Oh, all the arcade games. I'm okay with all that. You don't have to buy it or pay for it. It's like you don't have to get the $9 popcorn if you don't want to. I've said this before. We do sneak in almost always our own M&Ms, and my wife will take a bottle of water and maybe one other thing. It's hard to smuggle in your own big popcorn. That's tough to do.
I used to do it.
Dan, I think you've done everything. I've told this story at least 5 times, but we were with two friends, another couple. And we took chicken wings in. And that was so embarrassing because immediately everybody could smell them. And people were leaning over in their seats going, where'd you get chicken wings? I didn't know they served chicken wings. And each one we had to go, they don't, we brought our own in. You brought your own, and they realized you brought your own chicken wings? Yeah, so it was embarrassing, and we'll never do it again. Folks, it is time to talk about movies and TV shows. And we're going to kick that around with Dan Buffo, who's brought to you by Window World, another fantastic sponsor that's keeping this ship afloat. And your way to thank them is to make sure you include them and give them a chance when the time comes, and it will, that you have to replace windows. You can find out more about this great value and this great company at windowworldstlouis.com. Would you please say hello to Dan Buffa?
Hello, everybody, listening audience.
Dan brought his little boy in here.
The muscle.
And he's outside on an iPad or something playing video games. And after I saw that kid win $3 million, normally I would say, well, I hope you're monitoring how much time you're spending. Keep going.
Yeah.
Spend all the time you want. Daddy wants $3 million.
Yeah, he's got about a week, maybe 10 days left before school starts. Then the usage of that goes way down. So he's kind of soaking up the last parts of summer before the school comes back.
All right, I'd like to start by telling you about, I didn't see the movie. My son and his wife went to see it this past weekend. Mm. And before I tell you what it is, I suspected that it would be a movie I would hate simply because of the director. He's only done one movie I really liked. And because of the fact...
Can I guess?
You'll guess it. Go ahead.
His name his initials are QT.
Yes. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
And here's how I knew it was horrible. Because almost all of the hype, and it's about the fact that these two are in a movie together. It's not about the movie. Never once have they tried to make me think, well, that sounds like a good movie. My son said it was maybe the worst, certainly one of the worst movies that they've ever seen. And they thought twice about getting them walking out. And he said, once he realized, well, we've suffered an hour, maybe it'll get better. And he said, it didn't. It's
terrible. I'm
going to
disagree with them. It's
well,
so
you,
hard.
You will disagree, and I expected you to, but I don't think I'd like it. The only thing he's ever done that I really like was Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, yeah.
That is a fantastic.
For me, it's Pulp Fiction. That's his best.
We went to see Pulp Fiction with another couple when it came out, and we walked out.
Yeah, yeah.
It was way too violent,
yeah.
Way too dark, and it, I didn't get it. I just didn't get it. And he said he, right now, having just seen, has no idea what this movie's about, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I mean,
he really doesn't even understand.
You see, and when it's not just about DiCaprio and Pitt. I mean, it's his love letter to old Hollywood, 1960s, the way they made movies. This one is slower and more relaxed and not as violent as his past films, because it really goes into these two guys, they're best friends. Leonardo DiCaprio is a fading TV cowboy star. His name is Rick Dalton. He was a big TV star, but now he's just a guest star in other shows. He's like the heavy. He's the bad guy. And Brad Pitt plays his stunt double, Cliff Booth. And they're basically seeing the industry kind of pass them by.
Okay, is it true, too? My son said Brad Pitt says like 12 words in the whole movie.
It is, but I think his performance is great. I mean, Brad Pitt is one of those guys that doesn't need a lot of dialogue, kind of like Clive Owen, like Russell Crowe. He can really give
Eastwood.
A performance. He can just, he knows how to use his lines. I would say he says more than that. He gets more towards the end. But he knows how to use his lines. DiCaprio does have more of them, but they're best friends. And they, you know, Cliff Booth is basically, Pitt's character is DiCaprio's stunt double. And they're both kind of seeing their work kind of go away because, you know, the industry was changing in 1969, which is where this takes place. And it's against the backdrop of the Charles Manson murders, where his little, I call them his little minions, his disciples went up there and killed Sharon Tate and three friends that were there. And I think the poor kid I read about in the real story was just a housekeeper, and he happened to be there, and he was killed first. But what he did with Inglourious Basterds is what he does here. He shakes up history. In this movie, I'll just tell you, that doesn't happen. So he shakes it up. What happened with the Manson murders, they run into Pitt and DiCaprio's character, which makes for a really good ending. And here's the thing about this movie. I watched it twice inside of 12 hours. I watched a three-hour movie twice.
Why?
Because I left it on Wednesday night, which was a screening, and I liked it. But there is so much to unpack in this movie. Sometimes movies that, you know, there's so much to let marinate and to think about that I went back and watched it at the Galleria where my buddy puts on the movies for his staff. So I watched it again. And the second time, I absolutely loved it because the hype was gone. And the story, which is really, it's you know, there's a scene with Brad Pitt's character, Cliff Booth, and Bruce Lee, which involves Muhammad Ali, and it's just a great, funny story, because supposedly Bruce Lee was a very overly confident guy. He talked trash, and so Tarantino kind of takes that and plays with it a little bit.
Yeah, and Bruce Lee's daughter, if I think it was his daughter, yeah. Or an article, is not happy at all with what he did with her dad.
Yeah, I mean, the person that wrote a book on Bruce Lee said they took it a little bit too far, but he didn't think they took it that far. That, you know, in the movie, the bit is that he's on the set with Brad Pitt's character, and he's in costume, and he's telling everybody that, you know, I love Cassius Clay, but if I had to fight him, you know, I'd put him in a hospital.
Okay, you know what I'd like to do? If anybody's listening who saw this movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I'd love to know just what you, not a critic, not Dan Buffa, not my son, what you thought, if you thought it was really great or horrible or somewhere in between. I would just love to hear from like six people just to kind of get a feel for...
That is a good idea, because I go on Facebook after I write a review, and I have a lot of movie fans that are just regular fans, and they go watch movies. And I've seen a lot of good takes, but I've seen some people go, you know, this is too much. It is the first time you see it, it moves slow. Because it isn't like Bastards where there's a bunch of killing and it moves faster and the plot against go get Hitler, it's easy to like. But this one, I mean, there's a whole scene where you see Rick Dalton, DiCaprio's character, in costume, and he's having to play this character that he's playing a one-episode bad guy, and he's talking to this little girl who's probably has more screen time than him on the show, and it's just like a slow meditation on how everything changed. Like, no, thanks. In 1969... a lot of stuff.
Hey, shut up. Shut up
to
the 69.
I've got to give the numbers. I asked people to call and didn't
give
the numbers.
Yeah, give numbers.
855-282-8255. Now they're calling. 314-821-0590. Can we take a quick call?
But I do want to say that the movie has a really good payoff. And if you like what he did with Inglourious Basterds, where he kind of mixed up history, he does that here. I think there is a payoff if you go watch this movie. The end of the movie is hilarious. And Brad Pitt is the one that really carries it through.
Now, am I wrong, or are all of his movies pretty much, they're really violent and dark?
This one, up until the last, I mean, it's a two-hour, it's usual length. It's 2 hours, 2.5 hours. But for the first 2 hours, there's not a much. It's not a much.
That's Italian. You're speaking Italian.
Yeah.
There's not a lot.
I mean, you can almost say it was his most non-violent film up until the final act.
Okay.
But it's basically about these two friends and them going through the business.
Well, let me grab a couple of calls here. I think, who's up first?
Altina,
is that right? Yeah. Altina, welcome to 590 The Fan. How are you?
Hey, how are you guys?
Great. What do you think?
I actually thought it was great. I saw it, and I'm not a big Tarantino guy, and I thought the movie was actually really great. I kind of agree with everything Dan's saying. It's less violent. I thought Brad and Leo were hilarious, and I actually think you might enjoy it.
Okay. All right. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Steve is next. Steve, welcome to 590, The Fan. What do you think about it?
Hi, Frank. Amen the PM.
Thank you.
My wife, Jan, and I just left the show, and we loved it. And I think you would too.
No kidding.
We're about the same age, and all the nostalgia and seeing all the things that we.
That's a big factor.
Like
yeah, but Dan, how old are you, Dan? You're not old enough to.
I know.
30 something.
But I'm
30 something.
But I do respect. I mean,
thank you, Steve. Thank you for the call.
This is a shoe-in for production.
Okay, I think Steve has a great point. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon. I would not like that at all if I weren't able to sit there and go, oh my goodness, I remember that car, and I remember when those grocery stores and that drugstore, and I used to, we had a street that looked just like that. It wouldn't mean squat.
The one thing, and this is why I said in my review for KSTK that this is his most personal film, is I think this is him paying tribute to those old days. You have the streets look the same. He has old posters. He has the guy from, guess who plays Steve McQueen in this movie? Bobby Axelrod from Billions.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, he puts a hairpiece on, and Damian Lewis kind of looks like Steve McQueen.
I don't know how they could pull that off because Damian Lewis is not a handsome guy. McQueen was a pretty good looking guy.
But they gave him, you know, I think it's later years Steve McQueen because I think. And again, 1969, because, of course, the murders happened in August.
Hell of a thing. We have a guest in here, and would you please not do the 69 thing?
I'm just
going to
say late 60s.
Brother. Can we talk to Linda real quick?
Go ahead, yeah.
Linda, welcome to 590 The Fan. How are you?
Hi, Frank. I'm doing great. Okay, I saw the movie with my 39-year-old son. We had a night together. It was fantastic. The music was wonderful. It was the slowest movie in the world, and some of the scenes were, why did that even just happen? It was not good. I think you would hate it.
Wow.
Isn't this interesting?
this is great.
This is interesting to me.
This is the great thing about movies. All the takes are going to be so all over the place.
Linda had a good night because she was with her son, and but the movie was horrible. Linda, thank you.
Did your son like it, Linda?
Right. No, he did
not.
Oh,
and he's 39.
It was just way slow. He rated it a 5 out of 10.
Mm.
And
that's
I gave it a 4.5.
Thank
you.
Because it takes. I will agree. The first 2 hours. I mean, it's building up to the plot because the Manson, that whole thing is kind of a subplot. The main plot is Dalton kind of his.
Why does they even need the Manson?
Because I think he wanted to kind of have that little backdrop, the realism, kind of like he did with with Hitler, but to a lesser extent here, that these, because, you know, Brad Pitt's character has a great scene where he goes out to Spahn Ranch. He picks up this hitchhiker who's one of Manson's kind of like one of his followers, and he takes her out to this Spahn Ranch. One of the best scenes in the movie, because you know that the tension's there. You have this guy who doesn't know where he's going. He doesn't know that Spahn Ranch has been taken over, which it did in real life. It was taken over [S2] Right. [S1] By Manson's followers. He wants to know what happened to George Spahn. Like, where's George at? Who are you people? And it's a great slow scene that has a good payoff. But as with much of the movie, it is a slower movie. There isn't like a lot of driving action.
I don't have a problem with slow.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like if you don't like his violence, you'll like this film because there's not a lot of violence
like
to the end.
Violence. I like violence in some things. But I like Goodfellas.
But here it's used more. It's more effectively used. Like it's more of a jolt. Like you're kind of like Cliff Booth, Brad Pitt's character, when you're out in that Spahn Ranch, because he thinks he's just taking some girl back to her place. And then he goes, because they used to film movies at Spahn Ranch. And in this movie, his stunt double worked at this ranch. So he wants to know, wait a minute, you live here? And the whole scene is just kind of goes from okay to very, very bad.
Well, I'm glad we took some calls, because here's the thing. I had pretty much decided I would never trust Rotten Tomatoes again. Rotten Tomatoes gave it 75% mm-hmm. of moviegoers liked it. And I think critics were like 80-something. I thought, there's no way. There's no way 75. Well, now I realize maybe 75% did like it.
Yeah, and Al Pacino's in it. He plays the agent that tries to get DiCaprio's career back on track. Timothy Oliphant is in it. It's Luke Perry's last film. I mean, and Margot Robbie plays Sharon Tate really well, by the way.
Margot Robbie.
Yeah, very well. And I don't know. I the second time I was able to kind of, all the hype was gone. All the, oh my gosh, is this Quentin Tarantino's ninth film? By the way, it's his tenth, because I'm one of the people that still separate Kill Bill 1 and 2. Now he tries to put them as one big movie, but they are released as two movies, so I consider them two. So this is his tenth film.
Well, USA Today broke out 10 Tarantino movies, because I think he's only had 10 that really
were his.
Yeah. And they said, they ranked them. And this one came in either fifth or sixth. I mean, it wasn't even.
Do you want my list?
Three.
Because it's a little bit, let's just say it gets a little bit higher.
I saw your list on Facebook.
Let's see. Well, where is my list? Well, here we go. Quentin Tarantino movie rankings. Number one, Pulp Fiction.
These are yours.
These are mine.
Okay. Why wouldn't you start at 10?
Yeah. Thank you, Tim. Now you've spoiled. See, you build up to the big reveal.
I've already
said
Pulp Fiction. I liked it.
Mm-hmm. See, and now it's all ruined.
No, it's not.
Ruined.
The whole list.
Here. People liked, oh my goodness, I wonder what number one's going to be. And you work your way up, you just went ahead and gave away number one.
Well, it's already been known, though. It's out there.
No, not
your list.
Did
you say it was your number one favorite, though? Or did you just say it was your favorite?
Mm-hmm.
See?
Of the Tarantino movie.
He just said his favorite.
All right,
Tarantino,
so go ahead. What's number two?
All right, number 10, Jackie Brown.
No, you can't go 1 to 10. I got to go 2.
Oh, no. We're going 10 to 1 now.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
We have to please Tim.
Okay.
Number 9, Django Unchained, which is probably the slower. That movie can have lost 45 minutes.
Let me say, when I see it, trailers and promos for a movie, and nothing in the trailer interests me, I don't go to the movie. Django Unchained, even this Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I didn't see one trailer that had anything interesting in it to me. I watched the trailer, I still had no idea what it was
about. The final part of Django was great, where they go to Leonardo DiCaprio's slave ranch, and all the action happens, but there's the middle part where Jamie Foxx and Christoph Waltz, where they travel to this. It's just so slow.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
So number 9. Number 8 is Death Proof. That movie is.
I never even heard of it.
Kurt Russell plays a stuntman, and he gets, he gets involved with three very dangerous ladies. And it doesn't end well for Kurt, but it has the great Zoe Bell, who's probably one of the best stunt performers.
Is it a Western?
There. No, it's more like a 1970s, maybe 80s movie. He plays a stunt guy Mike, who kills women in his car. He says, hey, let's go for a ride, let's go home. And he basically drives around. I mean, he ends up killing them in this car. He's a very dangerous.
He doesn't kill them by having an accident.
He does.
How come he didn't die?
Well, because he's properly strapped in. Yeah, and he knows how to do it. So that was number eight. Number seven, Hateful Eight, which is a very, it's a good movie. I mean, the movies that fall lower in this list aren't really bad movies. Just he's done a lot of movies that I like. So
wouldn't Tarantino have any teeth? Because I never, he looks like he never has any teeth. You know what I'm talking about?
He's got those weird frog like teeth, or like lizard teeth, like, you know, like tiny little things.
If you've ever seen old people with their teeth out, that's kind of what he looks
like. He's got a fascination with feet too. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh boy.
It's like women's feet is at the top of the billing.
Is he a toe sucker, you think?
Yeah, oh, most likely, like yes. Yes.
He looks like he'd have toe breath.
Oh, yeah.
Toe breath. Mm-hmm. So number six is Kill Bill Volume 1. I thought it set up the story well, but I think about his title,
Kill Bill 2, Hateful Eight. Really, this guy is...
He makes movies that would have been beloved in now and also in the 70s. That's really where he lives. Number five is Inglourious Basterds. I think Brad Pitt was great. Christoph Waltz, that was his big arrival.
Oh, man, was he good at that.
That first scene with the Frenchman
in the
in that old house.
Farmhouse with a glass of milk.
You knew they were going to die, but you also knew that it was going to be a buildup.
It's really good.
Number four, Reservoir Dogs. I think the dialogue in that movie. Michael Madsen playing Mr. Blonde. Harvey Keitel, Steve Buscemi. It's a good movie. It's quick. And it's, again, not, I wouldn't call it his most violent film, but it's a bunch of con men taken out, doing a jewel heist, and everything goes wrong. And so it's great cast. That was his first film back in, I think, 92, I think.
Okay.
That's number four. Number three, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Number three, especially, the first time I probably would have put it, like, lower six or seven, but the second time I watched it, it was number three. It's great. I want to watch it again. Number two, Kill Bill Volume 2. I think David Carradine, the late David Carradine, had a great speech about Uma Thurman's character and the way they wrapped the story up.
He died pleasuring himself, didn't he?
He did.
Autoerotic asphyxiation.
Well, you seem to be very familiar with that. Mm-hmm. No, for people who don't know, these people like to choke themselves while they're pleasuring themselves to the point where I think you're supposed to release the pressure, the belt, and sometimes you wait too late, and you had a really good orgasm, but you also died.
You get a little excited.
You're too out of it. You can't release it.
Yeah,
he forgot the wedge of lemon. Apparently, if you're on your own, you're supposed to put a wedge of lemon in your mouth.
Yeah.
So then when your head drops down, you end up biting it down, and the sourness wakes you up.
So it sounds like somebody's tried this.
I'm telling you.
I know some stuff, man.
Use a belt or
Limey is like
some stuff.
You use a belt.
I do not do that myself. Are you kidding me?
Limey,
come on.
You're basically like the unknown but useful fact.
Thank
you. Once a week, we should have him just tell us, if you're going to do this way. So now we know, if you're going to do it, slice a lemon.
Before the show, he's telling me that if you put a pineapple upside down in your grocery cart, you're a swinger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you know that?
I'm going to do it when I leave here.
We're going to do an hour on this because there are certain signals and signs that mean things we didn't know they meant.
Really?
And Limey is way, really up
if
to speed
you go, I'm serious. If you go grocery shopping, right, and you see a couple walking around doing their grocery shopping, and they have got a pineapple in their shopping cart upside down.
They're swingers.
They are swingers.
But what if you draw pineapples down in season, what do you use? A pumpkin?
You can always buy pineapples.
No, well, hold on. Sometimes people put it in upside down and don't.
When do you ever?
You
put the leaves down.
The leaves down.
That is what it is.
I know this is a sidebar, Dan, but this is what we do here. So does anybody else remember, as long as we're on this? If you worked in an office and you were female and you had a desk or a cubicle, if you set a can of Altoids out on the desk, it meant you liked giving BJs. I'm serious.
The Altoids for the fresh breath.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, it's not breath. No, it's a tingling. No, I'm serious.
Really?
Yes.
Altoids in her mouth is supposed to enhance
sensation.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Look at Dan Buffett.
Now I need to write all this down.
How old's your daughter?
She's 31.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna suggest that about when, because I have a sister in her 30s as well, and I have a sister in her 30s. She's born. She's 34.
Right.
Okay. She told me that when she was in junior high, which in the Wentzville school district was 7th and 8th grade, that girls wore certain color wristbands on their wrist, which would tell people how far they were willing to go.
I'd heard that too.
Yeah, no, in England we called them shag bands.
Shag bands.
Shag bands.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, but there was another urban legend that if you rip one off, like, you say if it was like the color blue and blue meant BJ, if you ripped off it, go, she had to give you a BJ.
Oh, no.
I just think Limey's laugh right after you mentioned his daughter was like butthead. I was just on TV.
Where is he going to go with
it? Here's the thing. There are certain things that some of us are, and we don't know. And we might make the mistake. For example, the whole Crips and Blood red and blue thing. I didn't know any of that until I was, 50, that certain schools, you better not wear red. How ridiculous.
Let me tell you a story. A PI employee of mine in Chicago was in one of my surveillance vans, and he had on a green sweatshirt. His assignment was over. It's on a Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. He starts to pull away, and these five Hispanic gentlemen, young gentlemen, were standing across the street, all wearing the same color of red shirt,
right,
and had guns out.
Oh, boy.
And he was wearing the wrong color in their hood, and he got scared. He steamrolled a fire hydrant, hit a tree, hit another pole, did a lot of damage to my car. And when he got the car back to St. Louis, we found the bullet casings in the back of the car. He went to the police, and they had a map on the wall where they had color coded off, where they knew where,
how ridiculous.
It's like, wow. Now, they said, sir, if you come back here and you come into this area, don't wear anything red. If you come over here, don't wear anything but blue. If you come here, don't wear anything. He took a screenshot of the map with his phone.
Yeah.
So in case he went back up, he knew what color to wear.
The world is gone nuts. And then there's this, Dan and I were talking about it off the air before the show. What used to be the symbol for okay, you just make a circle with your finger. Now you can't do that anymore.
Power.
That means you're a white supremacist.
Yeah, which I do that symbol all the time. Like, when I'm in the kitchen and I'm shouting across to somebody, or if they want an answer, just like, okay, I got you. Can't do that anymore,
Wow, the pineapple thing is a new one.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about. If you see somebody as I said off air, you see somebody drive around and you see just a pineapple flag in their yard,
then that
swing
a pineapple. Where do you even flag? Get one?
Oh, easily.
I guarantee you right now you can go
do this
online,
one night.
Online and go to Amazon and type in pineapple flag. They sell them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if that's flying, let's swing.
It's not like a giant flag like the American flag like you'd have out there. Like the little ornament ones that you get for like the Cardinals or the Blues or something like that.
Yeah.
You get pineapple ones. You put out in your yard, and that says to other people in
it's
the neighborhood.
It's party time.
Like, what's up?
Oh, man. What if you're a big fan of SpongeBob SquarePants?
But I think you also ought to put out pictures of you and your spouse so people can know if you're ugly or not.
True.
It's one thing to know they're swingers, what they look like. Let's have some pictures of
that. That's the important part.
That is important. All right, sorry, Dan. That's nothing to do with movies, but I think it's important that the world know about pineapples being upside down.
Since we kind of veered off there, someone else called earlier and asked if you had watched The Son of Sam.
Long time ago.
That you said you were going to watch. You were going to watch it, I think they had called before.
I don't know of a movie called Son of Sam.
Was it a documentary?
Son of Sam?
I don't know. I've seen it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What's it called? It's not called Son of Sam.
It's Summer of Sam?
Summer of Sam.
Yeah,
Summer
it is.
Of
it's Sam. It's about when David Berkowitz was loose in New York.
John Leguizamo was in that movie?
I watched Summer of Sam.
Yeah.
But
okay.
That's been out for quite a while.
Yeah. Not Son of Sam.
No. But that hasn't Summer of Sam been out
for
a long, long time.
Over 15 years.
Oh, yeah. I watched it.
Long
great
time.
Movie. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I quote the wrong movie?
Adrian Brody was in it. I think John Leguizamo was in it.
Yeah. Can we talk to Dan, don't worry about people calling
Steve.
In. Steve is up. Welcome, Steve, to 590 The Fan. What's up?
This is your pal, Steve Davis.
Oh, my goodness. Hello, Steve.
I'd seen the film and I enjoyed it a lot. I have seen other Quentin Tarantino films, and so I guess at some point when I was watching this newest film of his, I was expecting perhaps a tsunami of blood to occur in the last 45 minutes of the film. And you may say I was kind of bracing myself because he has paid very close attention to a lot of detail in this film. Like as Dan had mentioned earlier, here the Spawn Ranch, the hippies. I was even told, and I'm going to go see the film again. But
you obviously liked it. You liked it.
Well, I'm into history.
Yeah, but did you like the film?
I did, but I'm also kind of, it's, you know, this Friday is the 50th anniversary of the Tate and LaBianca death.
Right.
And what's interesting is, in kind of a cool cinematographic way, Quentin Tarantino has avenged them, in very interestingly. I, having seen his previous film, The Hateful Eight, the bloodshed in that film was almost unbearable. It was a good film and the acting was superb, and, you know, Bruce, no one's a better bad guy in cowboy westerns than Bruce Dern. But to see Bruce Dern playing the very feeble George Spawn, blind, and he's got the very pubescent, squeaky.
That's a great scene.
Well, you guys really get a lot more out of movies than I do, and you dig deeper into them than I do.
And also, Steve, wasn't that scene probably one of the best, where he's on that ranch and Cliff finally slowly figures out what's really going on?
Yes. Well, you know, and what amazes me, and you hit on it earlier in your conversation, the people who portray real people, I thought they did a phenomenal job portraying those real people. The Jay Sebring character is dead on. The Sharon Tate, Margot Robbie, is dead on. The young guy that plays Bruce Lee, I mean, it's undeniable who he is. Yeah. The Steve McQueen at the Playboy Mansion smoking the cigarette, that I thought was unbelievably uncanny Steve McQueen. There's that scene where they're dancing and there's Mama Cass Elliot and Michelle Phillips at the party.
I may have to go see it because I'm old enough to know all these characters.
Because, Frank, one of the things they do, even if you don't like Quentin Tarantino, he pays like tribute by putting all these visuals and all these. It's a homage to all this way of Hollywood. He doesn't really half do it. He goes all the way. He transports you. This film has to win production design unless something else comes out.
It has to.
Well, sometimes there are movies that people like you and Steve here and other people, they get something out of it that simple people like me don't get.
Well, I would expect the worst, because at the very ending scene, without spoiling it for the rest of the viewers, I mean, the Tex Watson character is in the living room and he whips out the Ned Buntline revolver, and I'm like, uh-oh, this is going to go badly. And
then it doesn't.
All right, Steve. Always nice to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. Thank you. I'm AM in the PM.
Oh, we know that. Thank you, Steve.
And really, there's just a great... And there's a little bit of a callback to Brad Pitt's character in True Romance, which Tarantino wrote, but Tony Scott directed, about Brad Pitt, let's just say, under the influence of drugs. There's a great scene in there that made me think about his Floyd from True Romance. But it's a really good, I guess, and he almost kind of gave away too much. Like I said, he plays with history, he shakes it up, he puts it in a blender, and it comes out a little differently. But
anybody who has no clue who Tex Watson was, Tex Watson was one of the Manson family.
He was kind of like, he was Charles Manson's
number one. But let's
say
somebody who doesn't know who LaBianca, Sebring, they don't know who those people are. Would they enjoy the movie?
Yeah, I think people like me, I didn't know who Jay Sebring was. He was a hairdresser, very well known in the 60s. I didn't know that.
Abigail Folger was in the house, too. She was heir to the Folgers Coffee Fortune.
Yes.
See, I know all that. I'll have to see it. I don't want to sit here and say I'm still going to hate it. That's ridiculous.
I think you'll come out of it with an appreciation, at least for some of it. You may not love all of it, but I think you'll appreciate
I've seen movies I didn't like, but I was blown away by how accurately they may have depicted and even replicated another era, 50s, 60s, 40s, whatever. The best example of that's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon. My goodness, you'd think you're in New York in the 1950s.
Yeah, I mean, and the way they do that, and what they also do, they really, you know, how TV shows and movies are made. I mean, they show you the backlots. They show you how Rick Dalton, Leo DiCaprio's character, keep has...
Remember Rick Dalton, Dan on Casey? Remember him?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, wait, that way.
That was Rich.
Radio Rich.
Yeah, but
this is brother.
There's a lot of tributes to movie making in there, too. Like, you know, he has to ask for a line because he's just kind of, he's a declining star, so he has to ask the director for a line. There's a lot of funny moments. This movie's probably one of his most funniest films, too. But I will say it's more of a personal movie. Other ones I think he was kind of making to have a little bit of fun. This one he really wants to shine a light.
There's one thing about Broadway stars that you got to give them credit for. They have to memorize the entire thing.
Yeah.
Movie stars don't. They shoot a scene, and seriously, you could come in that morning and they give you a completely different line that wasn't written, all you have to do is remember, because they're going to edit and cut, take another angle, so you can do it in pieces. Yeah. So that's one great benefit that those actors have. What else do we need to talk about?
Well, if you don't want to go see a three-hour, two-and-a-half-hour, two-hour and 40-minute Quentin Tarantino film, you can go watch a movie called The Farewell, which stars Awkwafina, who she's kind of a musician turned actress. She was in Crazy Rich Asians. She played the very funny friend.
Can I tell you something?
Yes.
Crazy Rich Asians, I would never have gone to see. And then it came on demand. Yeah. I watched it. It's really good.
Yeah.
It is.
So she
really
played
good.
The friend. She played the best friend. And she was in Ocean's 8. She plays the granddaughter of kind of a big Chinese family. And the grandma gets cancer. But in this particular movie, nobody in the family wants to tell the grandma she has cancer. They hide her diagnosis from her, and instead all go out to see her, and they have a big party. So this is it's kind of a comedy slash drama, because they don't take the cancer stuff seriously, but they address it. It's funny. You have Awkwafina plays the woman who kind of wants to tell her grandma, but she can't, because they just fear it's going to make her get depressed, and she's not going to want to know it. So.
Well, that's pretty depressing when somebody says, by the way, you're going to die.
Well, yeah. Well, no. So, and really, yeah. It's kind of a stage four. It's stage four colon cancer. So they tell her, oh, no, it's just benign shadows on your skin. Or like, she's like, what? Like, yep, you're good. So the whole family kind of works together to make sure the end of her life is more of a celebration than kind of a long,
that
slow.
That sounds okay.
Yeah, and the movie, they plays it because some of the family can't do it. They break down. They have these two young people get married so they can go out to see their grandma and have a reason, a wedding. So they kind of stage this wedding. And some of the family is giving speeches, and they tell the grandma, oh, I love you so much, and they start to cry. But there's so much humor. The grandma, who is really, this actress is in her first film, she is kind of a sharp grandma. I mean, she makes fun of everybody. She tells you, you have a big butt. You talk too much. It's hilarious.
That's one of the great things about getting older. Apparently, you just say whatever you want.
You just don't care.
And people give you a pass. So what's it called, Farewell?
It's called The Farewell.
The Farewell.
It's playing, I think, over at the High Point. It's kind of the opposite of what, like, you know, you get a big budget summer movie. It's a very personal film. I have a feeling that the director, Lulu Wang, who's been in movies before, I think she made this as kind of, I think this maybe something happened to her in real life. This feels like a very personal tale. But it's kind of crazy. You get diagnosed with cancer. What if you didn't? I mean, cancer sucks, but it sucks even more if you don't know. But does it really?
I love her song, To Sir With Love. Lulu, to school girl days. Oh, that was a different Lulu. ARDs for The Farewell.
ARDs for Once Upon a Time is four. Four out of four.
Ooh.
Four out of four.
All right, let's get those out of the way. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, four.
All right, Dean.
My son's listening right now. He's shaking his head. No, one ARD. All right, The Farewell.
Three. Because it makes you laugh, and it makes you think, and it's well done. But I don't think it's as noteworthy on a second viewing. I don't want to rush back to it. So okay. I think it's a three right now.
Here we go, three.
All right, Dean.
George is on the phone. Can we talk to George?
Talk to George.
Doesn't the actress Awkwafina own a water company?
I knew you were going to do it.
That's not even funny. George, I'm sorry about that. Welcome to 590 The Fan. George, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm also AM and the PM.
Well, thank you.
I would like to say a couple things about Quentin. The opening scene, like in Reservoir Dogs, where they're sitting around the table, that's some of the best dialogue ever written for a film.
Okay.
And I think the Christoph Waltz, when he's the SS colonel, you guys had already mentioned that he's sitting in the farmhouse.
Oh my goodness, what a scene! That smile he has on his face. I actually watched that, and I know I'm watching a movie. It's so believable.
It is.
You just get
the hair in your arm starts to kind of raise up. Yeah, and just the smile he has. He's creepy.
He did an okay job in Django Unchained, I thought, when he was the dentist.
Well, you're obviously a big Quentin Tarantino fan.
But what I have to say to you is, I wanted your opinions. Which is better, the work, body of work by the Coen brothers, or the body of work by Tarantino.
Well, I hope you're addressing Dan Buffa, because I'm not qualified to comment.
I would say early Coens is great, but in the last 10 years, 15 years, they've lost their way. I'd say Tarantino's got a better body of work.
I think so.
Yeah, because I think that Miller's Crossing is probably one of the better movies I've ever seen by the Coens. Gabriel Byrne, Albert Finney, great movie. But in the last 10 years, I think they're better writers than they are directors. So I would almost say early Coens great, but overall, QT's got the edge, at least for me.
My son, who works in the film business out in Burbank, California.
Ooh. Whoa.
In the legal department.
Yeah.
So he said that Goodman should have won an Oscar for his role in Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he should have.
And you know that I've never seen the Big Lebowski.
It's a movie that gets better with time.
I know there's the dude, and I know Jeff Bridges, but that's all I know.
John Turturro. They're making a sequel to it with John Turturro's character. He plays Jesus.
I don't want
to
watch
it. He's an obsessive bowler.
It's just Jesus as a bowler?
Yeah, Jesus.
No. It's not Jesus Christ. It's just a guy called Jesus. And he's a kiddie, like, he's a pedophile in that movie. So he's, I have no idea.
Hold on, pedophile?
You guys say pedophile, whatever.
Yeah, you're in America now.
He's a pedophile. All right, he likes to touch kids. There you go.
Okay.
Do you pedal a bike?
All right, there we go. So I want to know exactly what he's going to do. I think he's just going to continue his character.
I think you're going to see it's more of a spinoff about him than basically. Maybe hopefully they do time.
But he's a pedophile in that
movie. George is still holding. George, did that answer your question? Dan says QT wins out over the Coens.
Yeah, you know what? A lot of his stuff, the dialogue is without equal.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to pay more attention. I got to watch Reservoir Dogs. I'll have to watch some of this stuff. I will. I'll give it a chance.
Yeah.
I'll watch.
Guys, take care. It's always a pleasure to listen to your show.
Well, George, thank you. That's
great,
very nice.
Questions.
I appreciate
great
it.
Question.
Thank you for calling. Yeah, I'm really simple. I have a simple mind.
Ms. Coens did some great stuff. They did Fargo. I mean, that's probably one of the better movies. It's just
Brother are out there. That's the best one.
And really,
Fargo
for me, it's Miller's Crossing. Oh, Brother's great too.
Fargo is simple. And now you go to movies and they show something that happened 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Then you're in the present, and then you're back 40 years ago. Well, where are we? Is it present day? Is it back? And there's too much to follow. And then there's like eight plots going at the same time. My brain is just not.
But I do. You see how, I mean, I think the Coens, I think, and Quentin, they kind of borrow from each other. Their movies are kind of similar. Their characters are similar in the movies. There's no good or bad guys. They're all kind of decrepit. They're all going for their own gain. So I can see how he wants to know which one's better, because their movies can feel the same, the way they look at the world, the Coens.
I've mentioned this movie before. There's a movie that won the Academy Award for Best Picture. And I have never, and that was a few years ago, not many, but a few, I have still to this day never heard one person who say, one, that they liked it, or two, that they watched it a second time. And I'm talking about The Artist, that horrible black and white movie that was a silent movie. This is where I don't trust Hollywood to actually...
I watched it.
There's politics involved or something, because there's no way.
I watched it, and I didn't think it was...
That movie was not an Academy Award worthy.
It was a
movie.
Good movie, but it wasn't Best Picture worthy. And usually there's one or two every year where I go, you nominated that for Best Picture?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still mad that Shakespeare in Love beat Saving Private Ryan.
Never saw it. I don't want to watch a movie called Shakespeare in Love.
Well,
it was really, really bad.
Thank you.
I mean, really, I'll tell you what, for me, it gets worse with time. I mean, mm-hmm. When I first saw it, I was like, okay, it's artistic.
I think
artistic.
I was like 12 or 13. Okay. I watched
Ben Affleck with a funny mustache.
Sometimes the title just turns me off.
I had to watch it because I was watching on a plane back from America, and that was when everybody had to share the one tiny screen at the front of the aisle. Just such a bad movie.
Yeah.
Right. You have about 4 or 5 minutes if there's anything else you want to go over.
I think what I want to say is that Kevin Costner, of course, is on Yellowstone right now.
Yes.
But he's also going to be voicing a dog this Friday. It's called The Art of Racing. It doesn't look terrible, but I wonder If you're Kevin Costner and they go, hey, you're doing really well, your agent calls, hey, you're doing really well with Yellowstone and you're doing this, but do you want to voice a dog?
I saw the trailers. I don't know why he's the voice of the dog.
I don't know either, but they start out and they kind of fool you. You hear his voiceover and you see a car racing around a track, and then he's like, oh, wait a minute, that's not me.
I want a cartoon voice job. I could do that.
Oh, I would love that.
That's the ironic.
Why do you have a cartoon voice character? Just give me a cartoon character voice. Just give me one.
Any cartoon? Yeah, I just be myself.
Here's your line. I don't care what character go. I'm not going to go in there. That place is dangerous. Go ahead.
I'm not going to go in there. That place is dangerous.
See? That's pretty good.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good. Kim, do you have a cartoon voice?
Yes, I do.
Let's hear it.
I say I'm going to go in there. Boy, there might be something dangerous.
I think
in
that's
there.
Been done. That's been done.
Is it starring chicken? Somebody's done that?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh. Mine was just going to be walking, so I'm not even going to do it.
I love Christopher Walken as a cartoon.
I don't think he's ever done a cartoon voice.
You think people that are under, I don't know, 45.
I'm not going in there.
We know you do a great Christopher Walken. You think that people like Limey? Do you know that at one time when people went to the movies, every movie before every movie was a cartoon. Every single time
there was
a Roadrunner or Tweety and Sylvester. Every time, and it was always
my
a cartoon.
My dad told me that,
and I don't know when that stopped or why it stopped, because now. And this is the other thing that drives me nuts. They'll say, well, the movie time for, let's say, like Tim went to Chesterfield, is 7:20. Yeah, I guess that movie's not going to start at 7:40 or 50 because you got to watch commercials for products.
I love trailers, but now there's like...
No.
If you go to an AMC theater, there's seven trailers.
And then you got to watch this Mr. Marcus.
Come on the screen.
Hi, I'm Greg Marcus. Shut up. I don't want to see that guy.
When I took my family to see Ralph Wrecks the Internet last Thanksgiving, there were actually a lot of cartoons prior to that movie.
It all depends on what, some of them, one was
about 10 minutes long.
But I don't need like the theater owner sitting in the seats going, well, please enjoy the movie. Well, we'll enjoy the movie if you'll shut up and let it start.
Greg Marcus is going to afford like a drive-in movie theater. Quiet, Greg.
Oh, my goodness. It's just too much. 20 minutes of stuff before the movie. You think you're late if it starts at 7:20? Oh, my goodness, it's 7:30. No, you're not late. You still have 10 more minutes.
I really miss hearing the Werenberg intro.
You knew you're at a Werenberg theater.
That's the great thing. You knew the movie was about to start.
It's like, here we go. We're going to watch a movie.
That was.
Yeah, I remember going to Kenrick on Watson, and they would play that theme, and here we go. We're in a movie.
Here's what I don't see, and why did these all of a sudden disappear? Local ads for a veterinarian or a dental clinic.
You only find them at the Galleria. The Galleria owner does put those on before the movie.
I think that's smart. You got a captive audience. It's a business right here nearby.
Local. Yeah.
All right, we're out of time. Give people, I don't know why they would email you, but you never know. Give me your email address.
Buffa82@gmail.com. I do get emails from the listeners on occasion. May one or two a week.
You know how to close this.
And George called back real quick. George called back and asked what your guys' thoughts were on Once Upon a Time in the West.
Was it Once Upon a Time in Mexico?
No, it was Rodriguez's movie.
We're out of time. Thank you, Dan. That was a really good intro.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your really great note taker.
Yeah, maybe.
Rapid, you know how to do this.
I'm Dan Buffa. I've had enough of it.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Dan Buffa. Dan Strauss. Oh, yeah, George called back, and
I can't read my writing.
Okay.
Once upon a time in the West.
Courtesy of Window World, the number one selling replacement window in the United States. My bank is First Community Credit Union. You say, that's not a bank, that's a credit union. Well, a credit union is a great place to bank and do all your banking, especially this particular credit union, First Community Credit Union. I was in today. In there today, and I needed some 20s and some 10s, and I know that sounds ridiculous. You go in just to break. Oh, I did deposit a check, too. I like going in. I told you that before. Whether you go in or you drive through or you do it all online or you're on the phone and you never go in, this is a terrific place to bank. What makes a place a great place to bank? Well, obviously, how you're treated, the way people treat you when you go in. Here's the other thing. And maybe that's not even important because you don't go in that often. How about rates, competitive rates? When you borrow money or save money, in both cases, you'd like to think you're getting as good a rate as you can get anywhere. And they are really on top of that. you'd be hard pressed to go anywhere and get better rates. And then as far as what you need from a bank, well, most people need the same things. Your credit card, debit card, line of credit if you're a business or a business partner if you're a small business. For personal banking, I just mentioned them. Debit card, credit card, home loan, maybe, whatever it is you're doing now where you're banking, if you're not doing it at First Community Credit Union, they'd love to have you as a member. We'd love to have you join us, all of us who do all our banking there. Also sponsors of the only yard sale that I know of in the United States where somebody sold an airplane. That still blows me away that a couple of weeks ago we sold an airplane on the yard sale. They are the exclusive sponsor. Saturday morning, 7 to 9 o'clock, right here on 590 The Fan with the this yard sale is so good, you have two hosts, Dan Strauss and Scott Sherman. First Community Credit Union, over 40 locations, and you can find out more at firstcommunity.com. I have a joke in the Playhouse that I think I've told once, I believe, since I've been here, and for Courtney, who asked for it, it has to be in my top 20, and it takes a little time to tell it right, but that's sometimes the best part of the joke. So I think you'll like it. Stick around because the Playhouse is coming up right after the news. It's 5 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is 590 The Fan, KFNS Wood River, St. Louis, and 590thefan.com, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. The second round of Democratic presidential debates is set to begin.